Going on, everybody? It's Hunting Out Loud, your host Rob Marchand, and today we're going to be talking with a local legend, John Burton. We're talking about 50 years experience, so we're going to go way back and to the present right now. What's going on, John? Thanks for coming on.
Rob, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, there's a lot of people looking forward to listening to this, so you know, that's you've helped a lot of guys out. You know, I put a post on the page the other day, and I know Greg Hicks and Cody Cornwell, you know, they just raved about you helping them duck hunting, and I'm sure they picked your brain a lot. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've had a lot of discussions. Yeah.
Well, I know
that, and you can learn a lot from listening, you know.
Well, especially someone that knows what they're talking about, you know. Like I said, 50 years experience. Can you, you know, just, like I said, we didn't script anything here. We didn't write nothing down. We're just going to go with it. But, can you think back when you first started hunting? I mean, you've seen the change.
Rob, I've seen major changes. Back when I first started hunting, actually, it's been longer than 50. I started going with my family. My whole family were hunters. Grandfather's father, uncles, everybody were hunters. It just was logical that I was going to be. They started taking me when I was way too young to you know, carry a gun. But back in the day, I'm talking back in the late 50s now, there was, in this area, there was squirrel and rabbit and quail in the fall. Squirrel started in August, and then you had rabbit and quail in the fall, and that was it. And honestly, back at that day, my grandfather was a barber in Louisa, and a couple weeks before the opening day of squirrel season, it was almost like it was a national holiday. Mm-hmm. Those guys would flock into that barbershop, and that's all they talked about was squirrel hunting. Mm-hmm. You know, how, is there any hickory nuts? And are the hickory nuts ripe yet? Are they cutting yet? And all that stuff. But that's all they had to do was squirrels. Mm-hmm. And then in the fall, they had quail and rabbits. Other than that, there was no deer. There were no turkey. Mm-hmm. Certainly no elk. Nothing like that. And, you know, I've seen it come from, basically small game, squirrel and quail and rabbit to the deer, now the turkey. We've got elk just south of us here. We've got coyotes, which we didn't have before, turkey, you know, just things have changed completely, mm-hmm. 100%.
Well, you know, I don't like to bore people with the conservation talk because I know people's like, well, humbug. But for someone like yourself that's actually seen that work, I mean, you've seen it.
I've seen it. And, you know, I give kudos to the fish and game because they've done a good job.
Yeah.
Now, you know, some things you can take exception with. You know, everybody has we could have done this different. We could have done that better maybe or what. Now, maybe so. But for the most part, those guys have done a bang-up job. Mm-hmm. I mean, we came from zero deer to pretty good population of deer most places. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first started deer hunting, Rob, I'll never forget my uncle and I, and we had no idea. There was none of our people ever hunted deer. There was none here. So we were starting from scratch. Mm-hmm. And we would go out and we tried to hunt deer like we hunted rabbits. We just walked through the woods. Mm-hmm. I'm talking back in the very early days.
Oh, yeah.
This is the late 60s, mm-hmm. Back when they just were starting out. And honestly, if you saw a track, it was a big deal. If you could see a white tail bouncing out the hill in front of you, I mean, that was a major accomplishment. I'll never forget coming back in, you know, first question, what, did you see anything? Man, I saw a big white tail. He going around the hill. What was it? I couldn't tell. Just saw his white tail.
Yeah.
But that was really something back then.
The excitement.
Excitement, yeah. But now, you know, anybody that really wants to put a little bit of time in can go out and reasonably expect to kill deer.
John, I would think about a half a mile from anyone's house, you probably kill a deer.
Absolutely.
In Kentucky, right. Absolutely. Here, probably, I know, in the tri-state anyways.
Rob, right here at the end of my street, right down here at the end of the street, the other evening, there was five in that little green bottom right there. We see deer here all the time. They come through my yard. Actually, if a guy wanted to, he could kill one probably right here in my backyard.
Yeah. And you have neighbors that I could just right there.
Sure.
I mean, all around you here.
You throw a rock and hit their house.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I mean, and you know, and the reason I bring up the conservation is because, you know, it took a lot of money And the money, of course, comes from us hunters.
That's it.
And I know a lot of people
get no general fund dollars.
Yeah.
It all comes from us.
And we have to keep this thing going.
Exactly.
Guys like you that paved the way for guys like myself and the Cody Cornwells and all of you all out there listening, you know, I think we all take it for granted. And I did. And I started doing this podcast, and now I'm getting a little bit older, and I start seeing these numbers, people saying these numbers are slipping. And I know without the hunters, without the outdoorsmen, what's going to happen?
Exactly.
And now my kid or my grandchildren might not have, it might be back the way you seen it.
Exactly.
Because when there's no value on these animals, they're gone.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
And sometimes I feel like some of these younger guys might think, you know, he's just old, rattling, and paranoid, but I don't think I am.
No, not at all. But, you know, I mean, it's across the country. Hunting license sales are off.
Yeah.
You know, across the country. So, it's sad to see, but, you know, that's the only reason that the animals are here now.
Yeah.
Teddy Roosevelt, back in the day, started the conservation program. And had he not done that, you know, some of the animals and whatnot would probably have been pretty well wiped out.
Well, yeah, I mean. And
so, you know, I mean, it's kind of like what they did to the buffalo out there. But, you know, they started these things and these programs, and was just, it's just really expanded by leaps and bounds here in this part of the state of Kentucky. We, you know, like I said, I've seen the deer come back big time, the turkey, and there for a while we had a lot of grouse.
Mm-hmm.
Back during the 70s and the late 60s and all through the 70s and even into the 80s, we had a pretty good population of grouse here.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy could go out and find a grouse pretty regular. But they kind of died off now. I'm not sure whether it's competition for the turkeys or I don't know what it is.
You know,
some reason there's no grouse.
I've wondered that myself because it does seem like, you know, I can remember when the turkeys in the 90s mm-hmm. started coming in.
Right.
So I can remember that myself.
Right.
And it seems like as they moved in, the grouse started disappearing. I mean,
I think they're in direct competition, I think, with food sources and things like that. And maybe there's just not room in this area, not room for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, Rob, I can't tell you how long it's been since I've jumped a grouse. Used to, going squirrel hunting, you'd jump a grouse pretty regular.
Yeah.
Or deer hunting.
Oh, yeah.
Or in the fall, you could hear them drumming. Mm-hmm. Springtime, you could hear them drumming. I haven't heard that forever.
Yeah.
The grouse have disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder about, you know, I'll tell you something else, and we've mentioned this before, is I used to see a lot of fox, and as the coyotes moved in, the fox, which I had John Collins, he's a real big predator hunter,
mm-hmm.
good guy, he represents Kentucky, he's just great, and we had talked about that, and he said that, you know, they'll just flat eat them fox.
Oh, yeah.
He said what goes on is the gray fox, they'll hit a tree. He said, but a red fox will hit a hole, and he said they'll just dig that thing out. And I mean, you don't see a red fox, and no. With all the cameras that I set out, I mean, there's not many around.
Oh, they're few and far between. They're few and far between.
You know, but and you know, we have to talk ducks because some of these duck hunters that they will flip out if I don't bring ducks up to you, and we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But as we're talking about change, you know, there is one thing, one sport that I don't think has changed probably since you first started doing it, other than maybe the price and, you know, that's trapping. We have a lot of trappers listening. And, I mean, the way you trap back then, I guess it's probably pretty much the way you'd go about it nowadays.
Pretty much the same.
I mean, I think for some reason that just fascinates me, trapping does, because ever since trapping helped build this country,
exactly.
These new guys, and I want you to know there is a lot of young guys trapping, and I feel like it's coming back. So for someone like yourself, I think that'd make you feel good.
I trapped a lot back in the day. I caught a lot of fur.
Uh-huh.
The prices here recently have dropped off because of Russia and China and things.
Yeah.
Most of our furs were sold to overseas, to mm-hmm. Russia, China, in that market. And those have fell off. The markets fell off quite a bit and the prices are down now. Till a lot of guys who I think used to trap aren't doing it now because really you can't even pay for your gasoline much, you know. Of course, when I did it, when I was young, of course I liked the money, but later on I did it mainly as a sport.
Yeah.
It's a lot like hunting, Rob. You've got to read the sign. You got to figure where the animal's traveling and you know, where to place your trap and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good sport. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But it hadn't changed. I don't guess trapping's changed much with the exception of the corner bear, the body grip traps.
Mm-hmm.
They came into being probably, I don't know, 1960 something, maybe. But prior to that, it was leg holds, and we still used leg holds. Those traps, haven't changed much for probably 150 years.
Mm-hmm. Ain't that something? Mm-hmm. That's just neat. You know, and, now I had Corey Cox on. He's a younger guy, a little bit younger than I am. He's a trapper, and David French, he's got hooked into trapping now. With Corey and, you know, their big foe is the coyote.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know how much you trapped coyotes back in the day.
Never. There was no coyotes here back then.
Yeah.
You know.
So, but, and I guess, and one thing Corey was telling me, maybe back in your day, the mink was a big catch.
Absolutely.
But now the mink, they actually farm them, I guess. Yeah. So the process is just gone. So did you ever trap any mink back in the day?
Yeah, that was one of my prime targets was mink.
Oh, man.
Mink and muskrat and coon and fox.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that was what I trapped. And during the 70s, believe it or not, during the 70s, furs were really high. And mink were like, male mink was like $20.
Oh, man.
And Rob, I was probably working at that time. I worked at the tannery. I was probably making maybe... Let's see, during that time, maybe $140 a week.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can catch four or five mink, you know, that's almost a week's wages.
Almost a week's wages,
yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
So.
And muskrats even. And back then, now that's another thing. Something's happened to our muskrats.
Yeah, I didn't think about that too. You just brought that up.
Yeah, well, there's not near as many muskrats as there used to be. Used to be every little creek you went to, you could find muskrats.
Mm-hmm.
And even the muskrats back then were $3, $4, and $5 for good muskrats,
mm-hmm.
which was pretty good money because if you get into a good little stream and a good little hole of water, you might catch. And what I used to do, if I found a place where there was a lot of sign, I'd fill it full of traps the first couple nights.
Mm-hmm.
And basically you'll catch the bulk of what you're going to catch in two nights.
Mm-hmm.
And you catch maybe, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12, 15 muskrats in a couple nights.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's, you know, $30, $40, $50.
Oh, yeah.
And when you were bringing home maybe $100, $110 a week, net take home pay, you know, that's
big time.
That's big time. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and of course up north, there's still a lot of people trapped for a living.
Oh, yeah. Now, those guys do it. They go in it big.
Yeah. Which I guess the furs is worth so much more up there.
And there was a period of time in the 70s where gray fox was worth like $20 to $25.
Mm-hmm.
And, I bought a predator caller. I bought a record player. That's what it was. It's a battery operated record player with a speaker. And I had some records and I shot a lot of crows with it. That's what I bought it for mainly, was to crow hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I had a lot of fun crow hunting. But my point here is I bought a rabbit squeal.
Mm-hmm.
And, first evening that I took it out, we went to Blaine. A guy had a little cabin up there. We went up there and spent the weekend. And we took that caller and we went up on a little ridge right before dark and turned that caller on. And I played through the record one time. The record lasted about 3 minutes or 4 minutes. I played through the record one time and I started it again and was about halfway through. And right up the ridge, coming right to me, was a pretty little gray fox.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I shot him and killed him. Just kept it playing.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy was right out the ridge to my right there. He's probably 100 yards out the ridge, 75 yards out the ridge. I went through that record, started it again, and I heard him shoot. We killed two gray fox that evening before dark. That's like $50.
Yeah.
And I told him, I mean, you know, I was young and stupid. I said, man, we're going to get rich shooting foxes, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't come that easy. Now, we killed some, but mm-hmm. they didn't all come as easy as those first two.
Right. A man of memories.
Oh, yeah. But that was a lot of fun, you know, calling in foxes,
mm-hmm.
And mostly grays. Never did call in a red one. It was generally always gray fox, but that's what I wanted anyway, because back in the day, the red foxes around here, the fur buyers would downgrade them so bad.
Really?
Yeah. You could not get, I don't care what you caught, you couldn't get a number one red fox.
Mm-hmm.
It was always a two or a three or something, you know. And another little story, I used to sell my furs to a Marvin Mallow, who was up in Greenfield, Ohio. That's out northwest of Chillicothe on 35. And you could drive your hides up there, and you could get quite a bit more money.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what you were doing, you were eliminating the middleman. The local fur buyers here were like middlemen.
Yeah.
And Mallow was a big dealer. He bought, I guess, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of hides over the course of the winter. I took furs up there, and I had a real pretty red fox that we'd caught out at, around Blaine. And I told my buddy, I said, if there's ever a number one red fox, here's one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we went up there, and I was real anxious to see him. He started grading my fur, and he came to this red fox, and he said, well, that's a number two. I took exception with him, you know, again, young and dumb. And I said, that can't be a number two fox. I said, that's as pretty a fox as you'll ever see. He said, yeah, it's a nice fox, but he says it's not a number one fox. And he had a helper with him there, a guy that was working for him. And he said, hey, go back there and bring out one of the number one foxes. That guy came out, and honest to goodness, Rob, it made me ashamed of myself.
Mm-hmm.
That fox was, but it was a northern fox. It came from Michigan or somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. The fur was longer. It was much heavier. It was better color, you know.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, okay, you know, I guess, you know, you're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But
you just never seen one, you know.
No. And to me, it was a beautiful fox, and it was.
Yeah, sure.
But I'd never seen one like that. And he said, now this is a number one red fox. And number ones at a time were they, I mean, gosh, you'd get 30, 40, 50 bucks out of it.
Oh, man.
So I was thinking we'd hit the jackpot, but, you know.
Yeah.
A number two, you'd get maybe 20, 25. But a gray fox seemed like about any size you got, if you wouldn't tore all the pieces, you know, they'd give you $20, $25 for them pretty well. Mm-hmm. Great. So.
Huh.
But we had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, now seems like there's beavers everywhere. And,
oh, yeah.
And raccoons all over the place.
There's more coons than anything else now, it seems to me like.
But, you know, I'm starting to see some of these younger guys trapping, and I'm sure you young guys will be listening to this. Would you have any advice for, like, some of these younger guys trapping? Like, I mean, is there anything out there that you could share with them on trapping? I mean, I know it's pretty much basically been the same deals.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it hasn't changed much. Just try to look at what, you know, try to understand what you're seeing. Try to see, you know, where you think the animals are traveling. Of course, read your sign. You know, you got droppings and you got tracks and you got things like that you look at. But then one thing, if you're going to trap predators, you know, you got to be fairly clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be pretty much scent free.
Mm-hmm.
And, I trapped foxes, but, I never did fool with coyotes because, like I said, most time when I trapped, there was no coyotes here. Although I did trap a little bit after I retired here,
mm-hmm.
and caught some coons. And at that time, that was right. I got in right at the tail end of the coon boom, and those coons were, you know, they were bringing 10 and 12 bucks a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And Lord, you catch a coon anywhere you go.
Yeah.
So I did get in on that. But no, as far as advice, just try to read your sign and you know. Think like you think the animal would think, you know, where's he going to go? What's he going to do? And don't overthink it because it's really pretty simple. Animals are, you know, they got a routine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got a few that vary, but most all of them will act the same to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know, they all do the same stuff. So, other than that, you know, that's all I can tell you.
And, you know, I like to point out, when you said, don't overthink it, you know, of course I've just got into duck hunting and what cracks me up about duck hunting compared to deer hunting is you don't have to ask for deer hunting advice because you're going to get it. I mean, I don't, you know, I'll have guys 25 years younger than me that's never killed deer giving me deer hunting advice. Yeah, oh, yeah. And that's fine because I listen to them.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to, you know, tell you their secrets and how they go about deer hunting, their views and everything. When it comes to deer, duck hunting, it's hush. You got the duck hunting mafia. You know, I shared two pictures of my first two ducks and, you know, I was getting some messages, hey Rob, you know, just, calm that down a little bit. You know,
back off on that a little bit.
Everybody can see the background where you're hunting there. That place, that cornfield is going to be plumb full. I was like, you know, I never thought nothing about it. And I was just excited. So,
well, that's one thing, you know,
cracks me up.
Duck hunters are pretty, you know, you're pretty secretive about your little honey homes.
Yeah.
That's for sure. You know?
Yeah.
Cause there's, it's really disheartening to, you know, come up the river or down wherever you're hunting for daylight and get to your honey hole and somebody's already there set up. You know, it's a little bit aggravating, but, you know, that's the way it is when you're on public land. You know, that's just the way it is, but
yeah,
you're right. Duck hunters aren't nearly as open as deer hunters or turkey hunters or things like that.
Well, I like it. And the older hunters like yourself, you know, I say local legend. That's why I consider it. And I had Alan Grubb on, and he's a local legend from around here.
Right.
And, you know,
well, the older guys are quite. I'm not sure I'm a legend, but I've done it a lot. You know?
You've done a little bit of everything. You've done it for a long time, and you've shared your experiences. And, you know, I know you share a lot of information with all these guys, whether it be deer hunting or duck hunting or whatever, trapping right here. And that's what it's all about, is giving back. And hopefully we'll see this go on, you know.
Like, I'm hoping.
You've seen it all go. And once again, when you're talking about overthinking things, of course now I can watch everyone, what they're doing hunting, you know, because deer hunters, they're putting it down. I've done this, I've done that, blah, blah, blah. And I love keeping up with these younger guys and women. There's a lot of women into hunting now.
Right.
I like seeing them work. I like watching them, their strategies and their tactics. And, you know, I know when they're making mistakes or not, but, you know, I'm not going to say nothing.
Right.
They'll learn like I did, like you did, experience. Sure. But I think one of the biggest mistakes, and if you guys are listening, as John said, is you deer hunters, especially, a lot of you guys just overthink things. And I know this because I did it.
We've all done it.
Simplify it.
Absolutely.
The deer is not really thinking so much about you. He's thinking about, you know, this is a safe place. This is where I'm eating. And it's pretty simple. And once you understand that and get that, once you locate and get that buck's address, if you'll keep it simple, you got a better chance. You think so?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you can make something real hard, and it doesn't need to be, because the animal one's, number two is cover, security, and number three is continuing the species, breeding.
Yeah.
That's basically the three driving factors right there.
And as the season goes along, you just have to keep up with, as you said, the food source, where he's safe, and when it comes to the pre-rut, rut, post-rut,
exactly,
just get you a plan and go with it. But, you know, deer hunting drives hunting, I think, outdoors, and that's great. But, you know, a lot of these younger guys that are coming, I'm not picking on you younger guys, it's just I enjoy watching you younger guys.
Sure.
I love watching you guys, and I love watching to see the enthusiasm, and you know, I just... Because I remember when I was like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I was in my 20s, I knew everything.
No, you know everything about everything. Of course you do.
Buck hunter in the world, and you do what I do. And now I'm watching these young guys kind of, they're a little bit humbler than what I was. But, but it's, just don't overthink it, as John said, about trapping. It's the same thing there. And just don't give up.
That's it.
I don't know about you, John, but since we're on the deer hunting and you've done everything, we'll talk a little bit about everything. Just to point out one of my biggest mistakes as a young deer hunter is I would hunt every single day. While by the time it got pre-rut and rut during the prime times, well, I was wore out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I wasn't really, you know, my brain was done fried and all that. So I kind of pick and choose my times now. There's about three special weeks for me throughout the year, and I try to hit those.
Right. Well, I've got a special day, Rob, that I make sure I deer hunt. And over the years, and I've kept a little journal. Now, not consistently. I've missed years, but I've got a lot of information. that goes way back, probably 34, almost 40 years. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with deer hunting and duck hunting and all that stuff. But, looking back, and it just hit me one day that, November the 17th was a day that I have killed more bucks mm-hmm. by far than any other day during the season. November 17th.
That's prime time, man.
It is. And I mean, I've killed several more deer on the 17th day, and I've hunted, you know, a lot of days. I've hunted the 14th, 15th, 16th, and 18th, and 19th, and 20th, and all that. But the 17th has been the day that I have tagged out most of the time. This year, of course, I'm old and crippled up now. I can't do much, not anything like I used to, but you know, and looking back at that, I've had a good run, and I just remember Clint Eastwood and Dirty Harry saying, you know, a man's got to know his limitations.
Yeah.
And I've reached that point. But anyway, I went out and I made sure I hunted on November the 17th this year.
Mm-hmm.
And at about 9 o'clock, I shot a nice little buck.
Oh.
And it wasn't a trophy, but for me, it was.
Absolutely.
You know, I was tickled to death with him. And how that came around, I'd let deer like that walk over the years, Rob, and I know you have too. I've let maybe 100 deer like him walk past me mm-hmm. in over the last 20 years because he wasn't big enough. And, you know, he didn't have big enough horns or whatever. But this year, I hunt on Gary's place up there in southern Lawrence County, and he was hit really, really hard with that blue tongue.
Yeah.
Year before last.
Mm-hmm.
Really hard. And, we decided, I talked to Gary, and we decided a little management program for his farm there. He said, why don't we this year, if we're going to kill a meat deer, instead of shooting a doe, let's shoot one of these little bucks that we've been letting walk past.
Mm-hmm.
And his thinking was, and I agreed with him, if you shoot that buck, you're taking one deer out of the herd.
Mm-hmm.
If you shoot that doe, you're taking the doe and maybe two fawns and then their fawns, you know, you're
for sure.
And they need to rebuild pretty much after that blue tongue hit. So we decided that's what we're going to do. So, I shot the small buck this year and was tickled to death with him.
Yeah.
And, I think it's kind of changed my outlook on things, especially when you reach my point in life. It's almost like, Rob, you come full circle.
Mm-hmm.
When you first start hunting, you know, any deer is a great deer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take a kid out, he can kill a spike or a doe or a four-pointer or whatever, and it's a super-duper deer to him.
Mm-hmm.
Then as you progress through, well, then you start wanting to hunt the big deer, and you want the trophies.
Yeah.
And you want wall mounters and wall hangers, and you want ones that you can talk in inches, you know, how many inches and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Then as you, and I'm experiencing this right now, as you get toward the tail end of your hunting career, you kind of go back to where you like you were as a kid.
Yeah.
Any deer is a good deer.
Yeah.
You know, man, because you're not able to get out and put the effort in that you used to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't climb the trees like you used to. You can't walk the steep hills like you used to. All that stuff. So if you do get in a point or to a place and have a deer come to you and he's a halfway decent deer, it just tickled me to death.
Yeah.
I was tickled to death with that deer.
And that's what it's all about. And of course, John, you have a lot of confidence and stuff. And,
I've got nearly a, well, Jerry measured him for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, those dandies.
It's almost 170 inch deer.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I've killed big deer. I've been there and done that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have let a lot of good deer walk past me in years past waiting for another deer like that or bigger. It didn't happen, you know. So I've evolved.
But the film that you got this year at that buck,
it was just as good, Rob, as that killing that big deer. Honest to goodness, it tickled me just as much because once you get physically impaired a little bit and you realize that, hey, you know, I'm not the guy I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things change. Your outlook changes. And I was tickled as well with that little buck as when I killed those big deer. Yeah. Really was.
And, you know, first one thing that gets me tore up anymore is, you know, of course we have social media.
Oh yeah.
And everybody loves, you should want to, when I killed a deer before social media, I tried to run that thing, right or wrong, around and show every friend I had.
Show everybody you could. Absolutely, okay? Yeah.
It's the same thing with social media.
Yeah.
And social media is really good for hunting. A lot of people think, well, it's not, but I know it is because I'm now talking to people in Africa, Australia, Alaska, and Canada, California, because of social media, Alabama, wherever, all over the world now.
Right.
Because of social media. But the one thing it is bad for is for some reason when someone wants to share a picture of their deer, no matter what it is, if somebody has to say something. We're all in different situations. You're in a different time in your hunting career. I'm in a different time of mine.
Right.
Everyone is hunting in different areas. You know, some people might have access to all kind of 170 inch bucks or whatever it might be. Some people might not. Some people might have a lot of time. Some people might not. And as a hunter, as all of us as a hunter, it's a brotherhood. And listen, if someone posts a picture of a spike or whatever it might be, or even the guys that kill some smaller bucks, they'll get on there and say, well, you can't eat the horns. That's the one part that bothers me about social media. That's just human nature. And what it is you see this picture, and I know you're not like his. Most people are not like his. But what it is you have this phone and you see the picture, and you have about a second from the time that thought goes to your brain, and it's already on this phone, and you've already posted it before you even thought twice about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's what causes a lot of problems.
Right.
You know, before, when you go to the check station, you may have a thought, but the guy's standing right there, and you talk for a second, you know, you say something wrong, you might got punched in the nose. Yeah. Back in the day, there's a little bit of disrespect goes on as far as that. And,
I don't understand that. If a guy's hunting legal, and if whatever he shoots, if that suits him, then more power to him.
Encourage.
Absolutely. I can't understand why anybody would downplay or talk bad about something, a deer or something that someone shot. Or another thing that kills me, Rob, is to have a guy show you his deer and then start making excuses.
Because of that.
Because of that, yeah. And that's the very reason, because he thinks that people are going to start, you know, gigging him about shooting something that's not a, you know, 150 inch deer.
Let's celebrate it.
Absolutely. Don't make excuses, man.
Sure,
shoot. You know, I'm thrilled to death if a guy kills a spike, and if it tickles him, hey man, I'm thrilled for you.
And I'm telling you, what I see, and like you've seen it all when a track was exciting.
Oh yeah.
So, and now, you know, in today's age, I mean, it's as good as it's ever been right now.
Exactly.
So these hunters that are coming up, you know, honestly, they don't get excited about a 130-inch deer. Now, they haven't killed many 130-inch deer. Some of them haven't even killed a 130-inch deer. But they see so much on social media, so much on TV. It gives them unrealistic, you know what I mean, expectations.
Big expectations, yeah.
And that sucks the life out of it because I really see this. And I'm not just talking about guys around here, but people that I enjoy following on social media, I see it suck the fun out of hunting because they're trying to prove themselves.
Right.
And listen, I'm going to tell you right now, you know, I'm in a time of my hunting career. Let's see what's going on with this. Oh, we're going good. But, you know, I'm in a time with my hunting career where I'm killing the bigger bucks and stuff. You know, this year in Ohio, I'm hunting in a place where a 200-inch buck could cross there at any time.
Sure.
I seen an old, mature, big, I don't know if you've seen the picture of him. I mean, he was hefty. Short legs. I did not score that deer before I slung that arrow through it. I seen a decent frame and times, and I was doing somersaults coming out of that tree stand. I was so excited. I could care less.
Oh, that was a...
I really could care less.
That was a trophy deer. It was.
You know, my taxidermist, when I take him over, he likes scoring them, and he scored him. He's a 135-inch deer. I was excited about him as any bucks I ever killed.
What was he, though? Was he 4 or 5 years old?
He was 5 and a half years old before he said.
Hey, Rob, that's a trophy. I don't care If he'd have had a spike on his head,
yeah.
You kill a 5-year-old buck,
yeah.
You've done something.
Oh, yeah. And it's just, but I hate to see that. But, and like I said, what it is.
But he looked like a bulldog. He looked like a stinking Angus cow hanging there in that barn.
I'll tell you, he,
what did he weigh? Do you know?
I don't know what he weighed, but he was, and if you, that picture, I
he
made sure
to
I
like a 300 pounder if there was ever a 300 yeah. pound deer.
The picture, I made sure I stood right next to him instead of behind him so everybody would know the true size of him.
Oh, he was huge.
And, but when I seen him, and I had pictures of some good bucks. You know, down in that area, there's some big bucks.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah, there's a good gene pool down there.
Oh, yeah. And he'd come to a scrape and he had his head up in the trees where I could see all his body and I could just barely see his rack. And I already had my bow. I said, you come down here, you shot.
Just tell absolutely, you man.
So it'll suck the fun out of it. I mean, here, I'm talking with John Burton. He's been in it for 50 years from a time where a track was a big deal to now where, you know, everybody's got an opportunity to kill a Pope and Young if you want.
That's right.
But don't suck the fun out of hunting. You don't have to kill something. What you do hunting doesn't define who you are at all. So you all keep that in mind. A lot of you guys, and I know you all do for the most part, but, you know, if we can encourage people to hunt, pat somebody on the back, make them feel great about it, trust me. I know a lot of you all believe in QDMA, quality deer management.
Right.
But giving someone a hard time about shooting a smaller buck will not help them get involved with QDMA. Encourage them. When they're ready, they'll get involved with it.
Exactly.
But we got to keep them hunting, you know, and I'm not trying to lecture anybody, but I just, that's the way I feel, you know. And, so now, John, I got to tell you my duck story.
Okay.
And you know, I just started duck hunting. And like I said, if we don't talk about duck hunting, them guys will tar and feather me.
Well,
I don't know how many messages I've got. You make sure you talk to, John about ducks.
Just to preface this, I've hunted deer, turkey, everything that, as we've talked already, you know, it's all a small game, but duck hunting is my love. That's the one thing that I would rather do than anything else.
But, and you know what? I never understood that before. Now, see, I'm in my 40s. This is the first time I ever went duck hunting. Now, I've seen ducks all the time. And then, of course, social media. Here's where social media is good. I see these guys shooting ducks on social media, and I'm like, man, they seem like they're having a blast.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, there's more camaraderie there. When I'm deer hunting, I'm by myself.
Yeah.
Now I'm seeing everybody having a good time, and I'm watching Cody Cornwell, you know, with them little bacon jalapeno duck poppers or whatever he's got going on in the duck blind. I'm like, man, this looks fun. You know, I got to. So there's a place that I used to deer hunt 20 years ago. You're aware of this place.
Yes.
And beavers got it flooded up and stuff. And since I showed them pictures, there'll probably be 300 people there next duck season. But I learned my lesson. But I knew there was a lot of ducks in there. And Cody told me, you know, if you go down there, just make sure the wind's at your back and just try to get where they're at and see what happens, you know. So I go down there and the wind's at my back. I don't have no waders. I have rubber boots. So all these ducks are flying in, and I'm like, oh, man. Now, see, I never cared about ducks before. But now that I'm actually pursuing them, man, I'm starting to get this itch. I'm getting excited. I'm like, man, I gotta kill all these things. But I don't want to shoot one over the water because I don't have waders, and I'm not going to do that. Just say I killed a duck. So finally, anyways, I get one coming out through here, cupped up, and I shoot him, and he goes down. I get another one. Now I'm in real bad shape. I don't have no calls, no nothing. So Cody and Josh Menard goes back the next day with me, and it was cloudy, and you can touch on this here in a second. And Cody said, you know, on days like this, it's a little tough because they can see better. And so they was flying all over, but we couldn't get them coming to the decoys. And Cody felt like, you know, they'd probably been shot at since they left Canada, I guess, anyways. And then being cloudy, but there was a spot over there that I didn't know was flooded, and they was ducks coming out of there and landing there left and right. So Cody and Josh, they go on, and we leave, and I come back at evening, and I walk down into that spot, and man, it's, you can't see it, you know, from the field or the road, and I don't think nobody knows about it. Obviously them ducks knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about waist deep. and there's trees all over, and it's grass where that beaver flooded it. Well, I have to have waders. So I go get waders, and I get down in there the next morning, and by myself, no calls or nothing, and I get up in this one tree, and I'm waist deep in water. I don't have nothing to hang my gun on. You know, I'm just I'm a big time novice here. I'm a rookie, and I'm like a kid. You know, I feel like I'm 12 years old, first time deer hunting.
Sure.
I mean, this is what hunting's all about.
Absolutely.
And, now, you know, I hear these ducks quacking in that flooded corn. And Cody told me, you know, more likely they will come out of there and then go back into to that hole right there. And sure enough, it starts getting daylight and, man, there's ducks everywhere. And they start flying in there. And I mean, I'm looking left, right, up, down. I don't know what to do. And finally I get calmed down and I shoot me a couple. So now I'm really hooked. Now I go and I buy decoys and I call Nick McWhorter and I'm going to take off. I'm calling off work and you know, I work for you for, so you know how I am. And I already warned Charlie. And
oh, yeah.
He was excited about deer season going off because he knew I'd show up for work. But now I've started this duck hunting. I said, Charlie, I need vacation day. Oh, son, we got more. I said, I gotta have vacation day. So this is, I'm just telling you, well, it freezes. But I'm bound and determined I'm gonna duck hunt. And here's another rookie mistake. I go out there, ducks will not land on ice. Well, I'd message you, and you had even mentioned, you know, it might be frozen. Well, I'm gonna find a place where it's not frozen. Well, I did not find a place that's not frozen. And I busted and walked out and waded through that ice. And there's nothing that will wear you out faster than having waders and busting through ice for about 2 or 3 hours trying to find a spot.
Exactly right.
But it's an experience and a lot of fun. And I can see why you guys love it so much. And,
there's nothing like it.
There's nothing like it, is
there? Nothing like it.
I mean, and I'm not trying to get all you guys duck guys mad at me, but I just have to share that experience. But when did you first start duck hunting, John?
Rob, I killed my first duck in 1968.
Oh my goodness, think about that.
And I jumped him mm-hmm. from a creek, jumped up. Killed the first duck over decoys in 1970. I remember it very well because Woolco at that time, you probably don't remember Woolco,
mm-hmm.
was down there in Midtown Shopping Center where Kroger's is now. It was a department store. Had a pretty good little sporting goods place. They had a sale table back there, and I walked through there, and they had about 4 duck decoys. Mm-hmm. They were styrofoam, really not very good-looking decoys, but they were styrofoam duck decoys, and they had them on sale. I had stickers on there like for 79 cents or 99 cents or something a piece, you know. So I bought them and came home and put monofilament fishing line on them and fishing sinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And went down to Greenup. River was up and down to Greenup. A little field down there that was a cornfield, thick cornfield. Water was up. I threw those decoys out. I was like you. I had no idea what I was doing. But a guy had told me that he was rabbit hunting the day before. He said he jumped up a big bunch of ducks out of that cornfield.
Mm-hmm.
So I took my little decoys and went down there. Had no idea what I was doing. No calls, no nothing. But ended up killing 2 mallard ducks that morning. And like you, I was hooked.
Oh.
I was hooked. So that was 1970. Now, I tried lots of different things. I floated the Big Sandy River. Used to go up to Bernal and slide a boat over the hill and float down to either Catlettsburg or Savage Branch or somewhere and pull the boat up. And you know, you're young and dumb, do stupid things. I've slid and drug boats, Rob, over through fields and things for hundreds of yards to get back to the truck to get it loaded up, you know, mm-hmm. just to say you went duck hunting. But we jumped several ducks up, there and shot a few, but really I didn't get started decoy hunting and learning to call and, you know, calling. Plays a big part in duck hunting. If a person can call halfway decent, it really serves a good purpose. But if a guy doesn't really know how to call, it probably does a lot more harm than it does good.
I can see that.
Yeah. In fact, there's been some experts have said that the greatest duck conservation tool ever invented was a duck call in somebody's hands that didn't know how to blow it. And that saved more ducks' lives than anything else. But, I actually learned more from a gentleman in Ironton, Ohio. He's still alive. He's pretty old now. His name was Jim Adkins. He'd been in the service, and he'd been stationed in Louisiana, and he duck hunted with Cajuns, and then he ended up in Arkansas, and of course, Arkansas, everybody down there duck hunts.
Yeah.
And he had learned a lot. He knew how to duck hunt. He knew how to blow a duck call, and he took me under his wing. We worked together at a chemical plant down in Haverhill, and he took me under his wing and taught me a whole lot, and of course, I was determined I was going to learn how to blow a duck call, and I about ran my wife crazy blowing a duck call here. And finally, I got to the point where, you know, I was getting successful.
Yeah.
I could call ducks in. And I'm to the point now where I've got a, you know, if I see ducks out there, if we don't do something foolish, I've got a reasonable chance of getting some ducks in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a lot of work.
Yeah.
But Jim Adkins, I went with him, and he showed me a lot of stuff about decoys, calling, blinds, wind. Wind's a big deal. You said have the wind at your back. That's the ideal situation. You can't always do that.
No.
But wind coming from your right or left, either one is good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one thing you don't want is wind in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ducks will always lie into the wind.
Yeah.
So you don't want them coming from behind you. And I've tried that many times, and they will always overshoot your decoys.
Yep.
And they'll land too far out to shoot. Mm-hmm. The only thing you can do is try to pass shoot them as they go over, and that's not a good deal. So, you know, there's a lot of things and movement.
Yeah.
You gotta be hid. They're like, about like a turkey.
Oh, I'm telling you.
They're about like a turkey. You can't move. You gotta be hid. And,
I mean, there's, other than a big old buck, I've never been so excited when I see, and you know, you're talking about the wind. Now I experienced this firsthand, of course, you know, a lot of growing pains my first five times out, and I like the challenge. And I felt like, well, I didn't know how to call. I had a duck call, but I just kept in my pocket because I knew, like you said, I just, you know, I am not a duck hunter, but I'm a hunter, and I got enough sense to know when to say no.
Yeah.
And, I was telling you about all that being froze out in that corn, and there was one place where the creek was running into the cornfield, and so it was thawed out. Now, it wasn't a very big spot, but every duck in the world, I mean, it was the only place that thawed out. We finally found that. It was later in the day and went in there, but what there was is there was a tree line, just one tree line there, and everything else was field. And then that water was right up into that tree line where it's creek coming through there. And that's the only place that it stalled, of course. Well, I was like, man, we're getting this tree line. We got it nailed. But the wind was, I mean, dead in our face, and it was heavy. But that was the only place to get. So I was like, well, you know, I'll just sit here. I'm going to learn no matter what happens here. Nick McWhorter, not myself. And we sit there, and we got to experience why you don't want the wind in your face. And, you know, I put my decoys out there, and it was real sunny. And that's another thing I learned. That glare off that water, they couldn't really recognize them decoys, and they kept circling, and they wanted to land in there. And they tried to land, like they cupped up like they was going to come and land in that wind at their back, and they just they couldn't do it. I don't know if it was pushing them, and they would like fold up and they would take off.
Yeah.
But they wanted in there, but where that tree line had them pinched in with that water, it was too close, I guess.
Just couldn't do it.
They could not do it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, you want to give them room to land. You know, you want to put your decoys, give them room to land. And like I said, you know, play the wind. And I always like, rather than have wind from my back, because if you got wind direct from your back, if they're coming straight in, they're looking right at you.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got it coming from your right side or left side, they're coming in, you know, from the side, they're looking at your decoys basically.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you do something silly over there, make a big move or something, they're not going to see you.
Oh, see, that's
but,
good.
But I always preferred to have the wind coming either from right or left,
mm-hmm.
and have them come in crossways to me, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that, rather than in my face.
Well, like I said, them things can see and they look.
Oh, yeah.
I've done learned that. They don't mess around, do they?
No. No. They're about like a turkey.
Now, one other thing that I experienced that blew my mind, of course, you know, I'm used to deer hunting, so I'm waiting on that perfect shot.
Sure.
He's got to be standing still, quartered away, all this and that. And, you know, the duck, you might as well just throw out the window.
Uh-huh.
And I got to get that out of my system. Well, I don't know that what they was, but there was about six of them come in there. They weren't no mallards, and they was like 5,000 mile an hour. I mean, I didn't even have enough time to think about shooting them. I mean, they just, and they landed, and I was like, wow. Now, they was small. I don't know what they might have been.
Maybe so, teal if they were real small.
They was really small.
They're probably teal.
And there's about six of them. And
those things.
I heard them before I seen them, and then they was just, and they was.
It's probably teal. That's what they do.
How in the world could you kill one of those?
I'm telling
you. I mean, I'm sure you've killed those.
Yeah, I have.
Well, that'll be a big deal for me if I kill one of those. The whole world will know about it because I'll do a podcast about it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to happen or not.
Those are teal. Oh, they turn on a dime, man, and they're just, and when they decide to land, I mean, they're right there.
I mean, they just landed.
Yeah.
I was just, what just happened?
Yeah.
I mean, I could see him over there.
Yeah.
And, so anyway, like I said, just like a kid, I'm seeing new things
that
I never paid attention to.
There's nothing like it, Rob. There's nothing. It really has got me hooked. I love shooting though, and my favorite duck is a greenhead mallard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I love shooting them, but I'll tell you what, when I can call a duck who has maybe come from 500 miles up in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and he's made this whole journey down here, and he can go 360 degrees, he can go anywhere he wants to go,
mm-hmm.
and I can take a little piece of wood or plastic and sound enough like a duck to convince him to come here to me, when I can get him coming down, cupped up, and getting where with his feet down, looking for the water there,
mm-hmm.
then that's as big a thrill or bigger thrill than actually shooting.
I can see that.
To me, I have fooled him. Something mm-hmm. that's as wild as anything, there's nothing any more wild than that duck.
Mm-hmm.
And I have completely fooled him, and that gives me as much pleasure as actually shooting him.
Mm-hmm.
When I can say, well, I fooled him.
I'm telling you, I can see that. You know, I was telling you, Nick McWhorter went with me that one day, and I won't get into that whole story, but my shortcut was not a very good shortcut. But Nick's pretty new at it. I mean, he's duck hunting a little bit, but he's just getting where he can call a little bit, and he's learned from some guys like yourself. And that day, we never shot nothing, and you know, like I said, the wind was in our face and all that, everything against us, but we've seen a couple ducks out there and Nick had turned them and got them to where they wanted to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And that was as exciting as anything. And Nick was really excited about it. He's like, man, you know, they actually had, we had the wind maybe, right? They would have,
yeah.
Like you said, and that just made our day.
Oh yeah.
I know it might be simple to a lot of you guys that are duck hunting a lot. I know a lot of y'all's listening, but, that was a big deal for us. And it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
So, gee whiz. So, 1968.
I shot my first duck in 68. And then I've hunted pretty much every year since.
Now, the ducks have come a long ways, too. You know, I look at all the numbers because I like Troy and the hunters. You know how that is. So, you know, the ducks was, I mean, they was in poor, poor shape.
Yeah.
100 years ago. And now, thanks to conservation and, I mean, you all.
Ducks Unlimited and all that stuff.
Ducks Unlimited. I mean, they just do a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot more waterfowl now than there used to be. And geese. Mm-hmm. Lord, there's geese all over the place now.
Yeah.
When I was young, Rob, there were no Canada geese around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now you go to any lake, you go to Greenbow, Grayson, anywhere, there's geese.
Oh, yeah.
You go down there to Ashland Riverfront. I was down there the other day, my wife and I eating lunch. There was probably 40 geese down there.
Oh, yeah.
On that grassy knoll there, picking grass, you know. You go to any park or anything, there's geese, golf courses. Used to, back when I was young, there was no geese at all.
Yeah.
So the geese have come a long way too. But,
well, you know, I load them barges down there on the river and, mm-hmm. I used to be pretty fast at that, but now that I've got this duck hunting, it's causing problems.
Take time to watch what's going on.
I'm swing over his, whoa, look at that.
What's flying up? What is that?
What's that boom doing sitting up in there? Well, I'm sorry. I've got a bunch of geese over just giving me a hard time.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, it's definitely a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've hunted a lot of geese, killed several geese, but, I'd rather hunt ducks.
Yeah.
I mean, ducks is my love, and greenhead mallards is the top of the line. I've killed, yeah, there's pretty ducks. I've killed pintail and wood ducks and all the other stuff, but there's nothing like a greenhead mallard.
Yeah. Well, how about, any banded ducks? You ever get any banded?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've killed ducks. I killed several banded
ducks. I don't know if you've seen that little boy I shared, that little boy at Country Boy Bling. I don't know if you watched that or not. His dad had him with a goose and.
Oh, yeah.
He, man. Yeah. And did something. Uh-huh. He cracked me up. That's what it's all about.
Hey, George. Get in that lanyard right there. Hanging on that. Right over here on the wall. Yeah, the duck calls. Rob was talking about bands.
Oh, yeah.
I started.
Oh, we're checking something out here, y'all.
That's it.
Oh, yeah, look at there. Ain't that something?
And the big ones are geese.
Yeah. He's got some bands here for you all waterfowlers, but
you guys would like to see this right here. Look at that. Now, that's big time when you get something like that.
I've had several others. I've got, out in the building, I've got some other lanyards that's got bands on them, but this is one of them.
Look at that. How exciting is that when you get something like that? Which was your first? I'm sure you remember.
The first, yes, sir, the first banded duck I killed, believe it or not, was right at the mouth of the Little Sandy River.
Really?
Right there at the mouth of the Little Sandy River. And it was a black duck. And Rob, it was like 9 years old, I think.
Yeah.
And it had been banded, it was banded in Tennessee. 9 years prior, and he was a mature duck. He was a grown duck then, so I don't know how old the duck was.
Mm-hmm.
But, and like I was foolish. I sent the stinking band back to the place over in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And got the certificate back, you know, but instead all I had to do was send a number.
Yeah.
But you know, like I said, I was naive. There was nobody around here duck hunting much at that time.
Right.
And I sent the whole, put the band in an envelope and sent it back to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, the oldest one I've killed was, 13 years old. It was a mallard, mm-hmm. Mallard Drake. And, I've got certificates around here. I don't know. I've killed them out of Wisconsin, New York, Ontario, Quebec, of course, that one down in Tennessee, West Virginia. You know, I've shot several that's been all around.
Yeah. Man, that's awesome.
And for this area, we don't get a lot of banded ducks here.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, you know, it's not bad. I've shot, let's see, I've got 8 here, and I've probably got half a dozen more out in the building out there.
Yeah.
But that's over probably, after I really learned how to duck hunt, that's probably 30 years worth of hunting, you know.
Mm-hmm. Ain't that something? Now, I know of somebody, I ain't gonna mention his name, like I said, I want the Duck Mafia to come beat me up or something. But, I seen he got one with the band, and I feel like it might have been his first. He's one, a younger guy.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, you know, he just sent me a picture and said, don't show nobody his picture. I'll show you because he's a big fan of yours. But so if you're listening, I'm sure you won't care for me showing John. Matter of fact, I'm sure he'll want me to show you this. But anyways, he was pretty excited about that.
You were talking, I was going to mention something. You were talking about, back when you were out there hunting at the cornfield,
mm-hmm.
and there was a place over in the trees where the ducks were just pouring in and out of.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, if you can find the place where the ducks want to be,
mm-hmm.
you find the hole that they want to be in, you know, you've got 80% of it done right there.
Yeah.
If you find where they want to be, you can get in there and pitch a few decoys out and get hid good. You got it knocked. Mm-hmm. If you don't do something silly, they're going to come in. If, you know, you don't even have to call.
Yeah.
They're going to come there because they want to be there.
Right.
But the thing about it, you know, you'll kill ducks with decoys alone.
Mm-hmm.
You'll kill a lot more ducks if you can call a little bit.
Right.
You know.
Oh, I've already been told, to practice in the truck by myself.
That's the best on your way to and from work or when you're loading them barges down there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, my wife can tell you, I guess it gets pretty aggravating.
Apparently. I've already been to, I didn't even realize it. So neighbors and everybody, they've already, you know, when I'm in the backyard, you just keep your duck call to yourself? Oh yeah, sure. Sorry about that.
And you were talking about those cloudy days.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Now the best day, in my opinion, the best day for mallards in this area anyway, in my experience, the best day for mallards is a bright, sunshiny day. Everybody always says, you know, good day for, when it's raining, pouring rain, good day for ducks.
Mm-hmm.
No, not the case. Ducks don't like rain any more than we do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get out and fly in rain. They'll stay humped up somewhere out in the middle of a puddle or a pond or out in the river or something. They don't fly around much in the rain. They won't fly much in the snow. But the best day for mallards is a bright, sunshiny day, bluebird day, blue skies, bright sunshine. I like a wind about 10 or 15 miles an hour and a temperature about 28 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
That is a perfect mallard day right there.
Yeah. That's the big cold front coming into deer hunt. That's,
yeah.
So,
but that's the perfect mallard day.
Yeah.
Those overcast days, they can see much better.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little more shy for some reason, and you have to back off on your calling a whole lot on those overcast days. You got to call much softer, sometimes not hardly call at all, but they're just totally different on those heavy overcast days.
See, I definitely witnessed that. And now I'm about to hook another one that you know well, Jerry Braden.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know Jerry well.
So I'd asked him two or three times. Of course, it was a little late for him to buy his duck stamp and all that stuff. And I told him, you know, he didn't have a whole lot of time. I said, we'll get it next year and start and we'll just learn, you know, fail and learn.
Absolutely.
That's what you do. You deer hunters out there, young guys, you know, you don't have to kill a big buck every year. Just fail, learn. That's it. You know what? That's the whole fun of it. Isn't it?
You learn something every time you go out.
That's the fun of it.
That's
every time you achieve something new, you know, I don't want to go out there, to be honestly. Kill a Boone and Crockett every time I go hunting. I would probably quit deer hunting.
It would cease to be fun.
Yeah.
If you did that.
Yeah. So, and I think it's what's so exciting about this duck hunting is now I'm challenged.
It's a challenge.
I've been challenged.
Exactly. It's a challenge.
And so, Jerry and I, when I was down there duck hunting, and even when I'm duck hunting, I'm still seeing deer sign.
Sure.
You know, it's just in my blood.
Sure.
And I see some pretty big buck sign. Mm-hmm. And I told Jerry, I said, we need to get down there and put some minerals out. That way, set our cameras up, and we might find us a big buck down here. And as we was out there, we thought we'd go ahead and shed hunt, and we was walking that cornfield shed hunting. Well, there's ducks flying. Of course, duck season's out, and they're flying everywhere. And Jerry, he ain't even looking for shit. Oh, Robbie, what kind of duck is that? That's a mallard. Well, what's that? I don't know, Jerry, what that duck is. What are those over there? I don't know. I said, we're going to shed hunt or what? I think we ought to go buy it. I said, duck season's out. Daggone, goose season's in, ain't it? I said, well, goose season is in. I said, I cannot blow a goose call. And I said, we don't have decoys. Well, we'll just set out this cornfield. He's done, John.
He's
toast.
Got.
He's already getting his gun. He's getting chokes. What kind of decoys do I need to buy? So, you know, we're going to tackle it next year, and I can't wait till his eyes get big. And you know how they get real big.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he gets him one. You know, John, you follow Jerry and myself. You know, since we was kids, pretty much.
Yeah.
And,
you were youngsters when I first met you.
And that's my hunting buddy. And I couldn't imagine hunting with anyone else. I mean, I love hunting with everybody. Don't get me wrong. And sharing my stories and sharing what info I can pass down like you do, you know, and hopefully I can help somebody. But, there's nothing like hunting with my hunting buddy, Jerry. Do you ever have a hunting buddy like that? I know you and Gary duck hunt a lot.
Yeah. Well, as I said early on, was Jim Adkins from over in Ohio. We hunted for several years together.
Mm.
We hunted ducks, we hunted squirrels, we hunted rabbits together, you know, and then, jobs, we went our separate ways with different jobs and this and that, kind of lost touch. And then, when I went to Mansback, I hooked up with Gary Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And, for the last 20 something years, Gary and I have hunted, well, since 1995,
mm-hmm.
which has been what? 24 years.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
So it's,
I remember, I'll never forget, Gary was working at Shredder and, I was up there talking one day and talking about duck hunting, goose hunting, you know, mm-hmm. shooting ducks and geese. And I could tell the way Gary was looking at me that he thought, yeah, you're full of crap, you know?
Yeah.
And because, you know, at that time, now there's a lot more people duck hunting now.
Yeah.
Than did back in the day. Rob, I'd go weeks at a time and not see another duck hunter. Maybe see somebody running them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they used to have some guys that would get in a boat and run the river.
I mean,
you know, they'd run down the banks, you know, breakneck speed, trying to jump ducks up and shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few guys did that. But there was nobody that hunted them over decoys. Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
We were about the only ones. And, of course, Gary, he had, you know, and I could tell that he thought, yeah, I don't believe you're telling me the exact.
Yeah.
So I talked him into going duck hunting with me one morning.
Mm-hmm.
It was a combination duck and goose hunt. And we went down to St. Paul. There's a factory on that land down there now, but there was probably a couple hundred acres over there, maybe 150 acres or whatever, next to the river that a guy farmed. He had corn there, and his corn picker was out of adjustment or something because he left a lot of corn in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And ducks and geese hit that field hard. Well, there was a snow on that morning, and we went down there and had my uncle with me, and Gary had him on his first hunt. And we walked, before daylight, we walked over probably a quarter of a mile walk to get to the riverbank, and we started setting. I had some silhouette goose decoys and some shell duck decoys. We put them out in the corn stubble and got in a little weed row there. And we hadn't even uncased the guns. We were still putting decoys out. And man, here come probably 75 geese down the river, and they flew right over top of us, honking like crazy. And, Gary's eyes were big, you know, he was hunkered down in the snow there, and we didn't even get to shoot at these. But, he told me afterwards, he said, John, he said, I thought I was on American Sportsman.
He tore up.
Anyway, we sat there, we sat on 5 gallon buckets in that little weed row and had the decoys out in the corn stubble in front of us. And that particular day, we shot, it was a good day. We probably killed, I don't know, 10 or 12 ducks, and I think we killed 4 geese.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'll never forget, Gary had, he borrowed a gun. I gave him a gun to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Had a little Winchester, 1300 12 gauge pump gun.
Oh yeah.
And, he got him one box of steel shot. And we were sitting there and he said, John, he said, I wonder if Walmart's got any more of these steel shot shells. And I said, why? He said, I'm going to have to get some more.
Hmm.
And I said, well, Gary, I said, and first off, to make this story better, he told me prior it was a pump gun. He said, well, you know, I'm not much on shooting pump guns,
mm-hmm.
but I'll try it. And, you know, we had several flocks of birds come in. We killed some birds. And I said, what's the matter? He said, well, I'm about out of shells. I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, I've only got 7 shells left. He'd shot 18 times.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, man, I said, it's a good thing that you don't know how to operate a pump gun.
Yeah.
Because if you knew how to operate one, we couldn't carry enough shells for you.
It'd be over, wouldn't it?
But that hooked him that day.
He's done.
He was done.
And that I know hooked. He's big time now.
He's big time now.
And that's what it's all about, introducing someone to the outdoors.
Yeah.
By any means, duck hunting, trapping, fishing, whatever. We got to keep it going. That's good stuff. The camaraderie of duck hunting is something that I think is exciting to me. You know, just that day I went with Nick, of course, and Dad went with Cody Cornwell there and Josh Bernard just to cutting up. And of course, Cody's watching me. I'm new. You know, every time a bird comes in, I'm like, oh, jeez, here it comes. you know, he's telling me, don't move. I'm like, I'm not moving. I know you're not moving, but just don't.
Just don't.
You know, like a little kid. I'm a 40-year-old kid over here. Oh, yeah. You know, that's what happens when you have the passion for something.
Exactly.
That's what we all have. And anybody listening here, you all have the passion. I encourage you to do something new, you know.
Sure.
Don't go duck hunting, but encourage something. Encourage you to do something else. Don't get beat up again. But, anyways, it's good times. And John, like I said, you know, you've done it all
I've seen a lot, Rob. I've seen a lot of changes. And I have to say that most of the changes are for the better.
They're for the better.
And the young people coming up now don't know how good they've got it.
Well, and I guess that's what worries me. You know, it's hard to communicate that without looking like being a butt or something. And I know that. Because I want them guys to, you know, listen. I just want them to understand. And I'm glad you come on. And I know it's hard to understand when you haven't seen what you've seen or even what I've seen.
Right.
And what I can see coming. And I'm sure you can see the possibilities of what could be coming.
Oh, yeah.
If there's a dip and decline, you know, some of these young guys think if I do anything other than deer hunt, and people's not going to take me serious. I mean, deer hunting to some of these young guys, I'm telling you, I mean, it's a big, big deal. It's not so much about them just enjoying hunting. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
Man? And I don't know. It's good, but I don't.
It's almost like they make it. I mean, some guys, it's almost like they don't. It's not fun anymore.
Well, it's turned into a bit of, it's always been competitive. You know, when you go to the gas station, to the checking station, and when I was young, you know, you wanted to kill the biggest buck. I don't think anybody really cared. But do you?
No.
I mean, I look over and see someone with a 5-point, man, I'm grabbing the antlers and might have my old Polaroid and take a picture of it, and you're patting people on the back.
Sure, congratulating them.
And like I said, but it was different then because you was actually being social rather than over a phone through social media,
right.
Which is good 95% of the time.
Right.
Because we're meeting so many people. All hunters are connected, and I think we'll be a little stronger because of it. But I do see these younger guys putting pressure. You know, John, everybody thinks, and there's nothing wrong with being a pro staff or the sponsorships. And I have 1,000 friends that are sponsored, and I support those guys, but you don't have to be sponsored.
No.
I mean, I don't think any less of you. I hope you don't think any less of me because I'm not sponsored. No, that's just not my game. And I started the hunt show thing, and I could feel it sucking the fun out of it. And that's why I stopped it, because I love to hunt.
Sure.
I mean, I have a job. I don't need a job. I'm trying to get away from my job and my pressures when I go outdoors. You know, when you was talking about trapping, you know, you was making money at your passion.
I was enjoying it.
And enjoying it.
It didn't get any better.
There wasn't no pressure. You didn't have to catch 5 more foxes than this guy down the road,
right.
Or whatever. It didn't matter. Go pat him on the back. So anyways, but for the most part, it's big time change has been good and everything's healthy. You got the waterfowlers, like I said, Ducks Unlimited doing what they do. You got, I know a lot of people in the NWTF that don't even really turkey hunt.
Right.
But they support the National Wild Turkey Federation. Right over the river here, they have a Jake's hunt coming up. You guys check them out. I'll share some more info on the Hunting Out Loud page. And they do a lot of good things for the kids. There's just so many good things you can get involved with nowadays for the outdoors. It's exciting. You know, and John, you know, I don't want to keep you up too much longer. See, you get to talking, and before you know it, it's
time flies.
An hour and a half's went by.
Yeah.
And you do forget about these mics, or
yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I just get interested in hearing what everybody's saying. Your first turkey, I can even remember when the turkeys first moved in here. I mean, how exciting was that? And I can tell you, I want to share a story with you, you know, about turkey hunting. I was out in Beauty Ridge, and they were supposed to turn turkeys loose out there. And I may have shared this before on on one of these episodes, but you all hear it again. So I won't tell John. But I come back to the truck, and Carl Salyers, you remember Carl Salyers?
Oh, yeah, I certainly do.
Now, listen,
y'all.
He checked
me many times.
He's hardcore.
Yep.
Game warden. Super nice guy.
Yep.
But I'm serious. He'd give his mother a ticket.
Yep.
I had another officer tell me one time, another game warden. I'd actually was in the roadhouse down here, and he'd sit, you know, he knew of me because of hunting and stuff. And we got talking about Carl, and he said, I'll tell you what, Robbie. He said, I was in a big meeting, and they'd asked us, you know, if you were stranded on a boat, what's the one thing you'd want? And he said, well, I wouldn't want my fishing license. And they said, why? He said, because I know Carl Salyers would show up to give me a ticket. Now, that's pretty good, ain't it?
Yeah.
But yeah. You know what? He would.
He would, absolutely.
But anyways, I come out of the woods, and I'm young, you know. I ain't done nothing wrong. But Carl's standing there, and he's real nice. He said, how you doing? And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm just petrified. I don't know why. You know, just being young, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
He said, hey, he said, your gun loaded? I said, it is. I just hand it to him. He said, what? He said, you can unload it. I said, that's all right. I said, you can unload it. You know, he kind of knew I was nervous. He unloads it and three shells. And then he said, give me another shell. He wanted to check, see if I had a plug in.
Sure. Yeah.
So he checked it there. And of course, it has a plug in it. And he hands me the shells and puts the gun by the tree. And he's talking. He said, well, we're getting turkeys in. And he said, you hear any this morning? And I said, yeah. He said, well, that's good. And he's trying to talk to me. He's checking my license and everything. And he knows I'm young. And then he's, you know how nice he was once he checked you out.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, well, you can care for a look at your truck or whatever. And yeah, whatever. You can do whatever. Well, all this is going on. And
was this the first time you'd ever been checked?
This is the first time I've been checked.
Ever.
I believe, yeah. I mean, unless I was with my dad or something that I can remember. And, by myself, anyways. But we hear a gobbler. He fires off, you know. And Carl says, oh, did you hear that? And I was like, you know, just shaking my head. He said, listen, he said, load that gun up. And he said, I'll tell you where he's at. And he's trying to tell me, and I don't want nothing to do with it. And I said, no, I'm good. He said, no, he said, you know, he wanted to see a bird because at that time, when we checked them in, I think there might have been only 10, 15 birds checked in down in South Shore.
Yeah.
I was down in Beauty Ridge.
Right.
That's when we checked them in too, if you remember. So there wasn't many birds being killed. Now he wanted me to kill this bird. Now I'm older, I realize that. But, so finally he pretty much said, load that gun, go around through here, come up this hill, get by a tree, just make a couple calls. He said, scratch your hands and leaves or whatever. And you know, so anyways, I go through there and I do end up killing that turkey and I come back and he's nowhere to be found. I'm sure he watched me from the road or somewhere.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
How he was, but he had left and that's just, man, you talk about, that's just a good memory for me for some reason as I got older. Just a nice guy. Wasn't he just a great game warden? And it took game wardens like that for us to have what we have now because he put the fear in you.
He did. Cause back, I remember, you know, back in the day, there was a lot of coon hunters.
Yeah.
And Carl would, you know, he'd be out half a night chasing around checking coon hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he kept the coon hunters pretty much in line.
Yeah.
For a long time. He didn't care if it was, you know, midnight, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever. He was out there.
He was everywhere.
He was.
I mean, and you know, you talk about a dangerous job, and I'm going to have Darren, I think is his name, wildlife conservation officer on here in the next couple of weeks. He's from Ohio. He works in Ohio, conservation officer over there, game warden over in Ohio. I'd actually seen him over at taxidermist when I dropped my ducks off, and I couldn't help but ask him. And he was in a uniform. He's like, yeah, I'll come on, whatever. We got to keep this going. You know, he wants to keep honey going, and there's things that apparently he's seeing that he don't like, and he has some things he wants to say, share. So we'll have him on the podcast. I'm pretty excited about that.
Could be.
So, anyways, turkeys, John. I say you've what is it about turkey hunting that you enjoy the most? I know just hearing them gobble
That's what I love.
Yep. It's almost like the thrill I get with waterfowl. You take a piece of wood or a piece of plastic and stick it in your mouth or something, and you make a sound that sounds enough to him like a hen turkey that you convince him to come right up to where you are. You know, that's the challenge to me is fooling him, you know, and that's the big thrill. When you call and he answers you, and then, you know, you big mistake, and I did this, and you probably have too. When I first started turkey hunting, I called way too much.
Yeah.
There's a gentleman lives right around the road here who retired from the prison, pretty good turkey hunter. And I was turkey hunting, and he came by here one day, and he said, "Hey, you turkey hunting?" I said, "Yeah." "You doing any good?" I said, "No, I'm not." I said, "I can get them to gobble at me, but they won't come in." Mm-hmm. He said, "Well," he said, "you may be calling too much."
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a couple of pointers, you know. And I tried that, and it works. And he told me, here's what the man told me. He said, if you make a call, and that gobbler answers you, he said, you've accomplished one thing right there. He's recognized you as a turkey.
Mm-hmm.
He's honored you as a turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he knows within 10 feet of where you are.
Oh, they know, don't they?
They know.
Mm-hmm.
He said, now the best thing you can do is shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, he already has honored you as being a turkey, and he knows exactly where you are. So he said, just hush up.
Yep.
He said, now wait 10, 15 minutes. If he don't fire off himself, something don't happen. He said, you might want to yelp a little bit again. And he said, see what happens. But he said, I know it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun when he gobbles and you call back at him and he gobbles every time you call, he gobbles.
Oh, yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah.
You know, but he said, we're trying to do the exact opposite of what happened in nature. He said, normally an old gobbler, he'll gobble out there and the hens want to breed, they'll come to him.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we're trying to make him come to us. And he said, the more we call to him, that just reinforces him that we're going to come to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, that's the biggest mistake you make. And I started doing that, and lo and behold, it's true. It works.
Mm-hmm.
I started being able to,
a little bit more patient,
to shoot turkeys.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I've went through the same thing. Yeah. They gobble when I call back.
Oh, man, it's fun. It gets your heartbeat. Like, you know,
I can force him.
Boy, he fires off and you want to do it again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're not going to force them to come. Uh-uh. And, you know, you talk about a moody animal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they can go from 100 mile an hour to zero in a heartbeat, can't they?
And what is it about one morning you go out there and they're gobbling from every ridgetop.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, if you didn't know better, you'd swear there wasn't a turkey within 50 miles.
Oh, yeah.
Total silence.
I'm telling you. I enjoy turkey hunting so much. You know, deer hunting, it's a job. Really want to work at it. And of course the work in duck hunting, but you have so much fun duck hunting with camaraderie and the friends. But then you have turkey hunting and it's just like you mess one up, oh well, you just, you know, you can find the next one, goblin. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, turkey hunting.
One thing I have learned is you got to have patience.
Yes, definitely.
Patience. Rob, I don't know how many times that I have sat down in a place. And I used to like to run and gun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, just take off around a ridge and just stop at the head of this little holler and call for a while and then run on out there and call and try to hit one, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times that I have stopped at a place and called, not hear anything. Ah, well, you know, get disgusted. Well, I'm going to move on out and go out the hill and have a stinking turkey gobble from right where I was sitting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came in silent. He got there. Now he's gobbling. He wants to know where's the end. You know, mm-hmm. Where are you?
Yeah.
If I'd have just been patient.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how many times I could have shot another bird. You know,
I've done that several times. We all have.
We all have, yeah. It's happened to me several times.
You know, you talk about, what he's talking about, introducing people into the outdoors. There's no better way than turkey hunting.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's exciting for them. I mean, you take them out there, they're hearing the gobbles.
Yeah, they may not kill anything, but there's action.
That's right.
I mean, they're either goblins or they're not. And you know pretty quick how things are going to go.
That's true.
And I like to take people. This past year, I can't remember. My son got one. I took my stepson, another guy. I took several people. But of course, when you're taking someone and they're new and you're trying to tell them what to do, what not to do, and you know, that's kind of a challenge. But they all had fun. And one day someone couldn't make it, so I said, well, I'll go out and see if I can get me one. Now, mind you, I've been taking someone every time, and I really want to get someone a turkey when I take them hunting.
Sure.
I don't care who it is.
Sure.
I mean, if any of you all out there listening, if you want to go turkey hunting, you just message me, and if I can schedule you in, or I don't care where you're from, you come on to Kentucky, I'll put you on turkey. As long as you're not crazy or some Anna hunter coming here trying to sneak up on me and get me or something. But, so here I've been working hard. You know how much work it is.
Oh, yeah.
I said the running gun.
Sure.
So I got this day just by myself. And I hear this gobbler, and he's up on the point. And if you know the territory, you kind of know what's going on and what they're up to. And so I knew what he was up to. And he was one of those, it was just gobbling his head off. Now I'm below him, and he's above me. And I know I have to get up
there somewhere. That's not a good situation.
Yeah, I'm in a bad situation. I have to get up there somewhere. So here I go crawling up the log road, and you know how that'll wear you out. And I get just about to the top, and I see him strutted up, and I just see one at the time, and he's probably 50 yards away, and I'm not going to call, like you said, I know better, he thinks I'm down there. So finally he gets quiet, and he's went around that point, is what he did, and I crawl up, and I don't see him, but I'm thinking he's just right over that point, I'll call, he'll pop up that point, right? So I get up there, and I just scratch the leaves first, and he gobbles at that. Okay, I'll just be quiet. I'm not going to call or nothing. You know how to play that game.
Yeah.
I keep scratching leaves, and he just keeps gobbling nonstop. And he's one of those that, and you had them that just never shut up. But they don't budge, do they?
Oh, no.
And I know this, and now I'm done with this bird.
He's expecting you to come to him.
Yeah. And even though I haven't called, other than down there, he's heard me scratching, and he wants me to come over and show myself.
Sure.
That he wants the hen to come show himself.
That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah,
know?
That's what she's supposed to
that's
do.
That's right.
Answer to him.
Yep.
You know.
That's exactly
so. That's the way it goes in the turkey world. But, so now this goes on for an hour or something. And I'm wore out, and I said, you know, heck with it. I'm going to go over there and kill this bird. So I try to get a tree in between where I think he is, or I called one time just to get him to gobble so I knew where he was, and I said, okay, I'm going to try to make it to this big oak tree, and I'm going to step around it, and I'm going to shoot that turkey. I get to that oak tree, and he don't see me, and I step around it, and I shoot, and there's four other big gobblers with him.
Wow.
Now, here I've had all these people all week long wearing myself out trying to get him a turkey, and I'm not kidding you, John, I shoot that big gobbler rolling, and them other ones just stand there, and they go over and start whooping on him.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, of all day, if I had everybody I took, they would all kill one of these turkeys, and they're just fighting. I mean, I'm standing out like a sore thumb. Have you ever seen something like that? And they're just weird.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sometimes you can't get away with blinking an eye.
Nope.
And then sometimes you have a situation like that, and they just started whooping that bird.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was still flopping.
Yeah.
And it just
I had two
head.
Come in like that one time on me. And I shot one and killed him, and his buddy, when I shot, of course he ran a little bit, made a little circle, and he come right back and jumped right on top of his buddy and just flogged the fire out of him.
Yeah, just whooping.
Yeah.
They're a lot of fun. I had so much fun doing it. But John, I'm not going to keep you much
Rob,
longer.
I appreciate
it. We've been on here for an hour and a half. I will tell you all, if you all listen to this, this just come to mind, but I'm going to give somebody a free shirt. So for you all listening, the first one, I'm going to post this episode of John on the Hunting Out Loud page on Facebook. And the first one that posts that you want a shirt and let me know your size, and I'll send it to you. What do you think about that? Free Hunting Out Loud shirt. You'll be pro staff. Hunting Out Loud pro staff.
There you go.
So first one of y'all that comments on that, on this episode that I share on here of John's, you're going to get a big old free brown, orange, ugly Hunting Out Loud shirt. So you're pro staffer. And John, I appreciate it. And all you guys, it's paved the way for guys like myself. Hopefully we can keep it rolling.
I hope so, Rob.
And like I said, you'd be proud to know there's a lot of young trappers out there. It's just doing it for the passion, and that's pretty exciting. And Greg Hicks, we talked about ducks, so you should be happy. Greg's big in the Duck Unlimited.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll try to get him on. So for John Burton, this is Ron Rashawn, Hunting Out Loud. Hey, we'll talk at you later.